symptomized.
Symptomized.
Cha. Also. Eva. Indeed. Trigunya. The three modes of nature. Vishayaha. Possessing. Oh, possessing as objectives, actually. Mune. O great sage. Yaha. Which? Asau. That. Alina Prakataka. Of one who is not freed from the clutches of Maya. Gunasaragaha. In which there is creation of material bodies. Punapunaha. Again and again. Translation, O great sage Shukadeva Goswami, unless the living entity is freed from the infection of the material modes of nature, he receives different types of bodies in which to enjoy or suffer, and according to the body, he is understood to have various inclinations. By following these inclinations, he traverses the path called Pravritti Marg, by which one may be elevated to the heavenly planets, as you have already described in the third canto. So, purport by His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. As Lord Krishna explains in Bhagavad Gita in the 9th chapter, text 25, Yanti deva vrata devan pitrin yanti pritir vataka bhutani yanti bhutcheja yanti manyajino vimam. Those who worship the demigods will take birth among the demigods. Those who worship ghosts and spirits will take birth among such beings. Those who worship ancestors go to the ancestors, and those who worship me will live with me. Because of the influence of the various modes of nature, the living entities have various tendencies or propensities, and therefore they are qualified to achieve various destinations. As long as one is materially attached, he wants to be elevated to the heavenly planets because of his attraction to the material world. The Supreme Personality of Godhead declares, however, those who worship me come to me. If one has no information about the Supreme Lord and his abode, one tries to be elevated only to a higher material position. But when one concludes that in this material world there is nothing but repeated birth and death, he tries to return home back to Godhead. If one attains that destination, he need never return to this material world. Yad gatva nirivartante tadama paramam mama. As Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, Majalila, 19th chapter, text 151, Brahmanda Paramate Kona Bhaktivan Jeev Guru Krishna Prasade Poi Bhakta Bhakti Lata Bish. According to their karma, all living entities are wandering throughout the entire universe. Some of them are being elevated to the upper planetary systems, and some are going down into the lower planetary systems. Out of many millions of wandering living entities, one who is very fortunate gets an opportunity to associate with a bona fide spiritual master by the grace of Krishna. By the mercy of both Krishna and the spiritual master, such a person receives the seed of the creeper of devotional service. All living entities are rotating throughout the universe and sometimes go up to the higher planetary systems and sometimes down to the lower planets. This is the material disease which is known as Pravritti Marg. When one becomes intelligent, he takes to Nivritti Marg, the path of liberation, and thus instead of rotating within this material world, returns home. Back to Godhead, this is necessary. Pravati lakshanachaiva trigunya vishayo mude yosavvalina prakater guna sarga puna punaha. So omagana timiranda shagranjana shalakaya chakshur and meditam yenatasmai shigurave namaha. So this verse actually is very much reminiscent of the verse in the Bhagavad Gita. Trigunya Vishaya Veda Nish Trigunya Bhavarjana Nir John Bo Nikusatvasto Nirgalvik Shema Atmavan. And for those of you who don't speak Sanskrit, That is, Krishna speaking to Arjuna, chastising him actually, and he says, Trigunya Vishaya Veda. The main thing about the Vedas, he says, is Vishaya and Trigunya. That means the Vedas are mainly dealing with people who are Vishayas. Vishaya means materialistic people. And they're mainly dealing with the three modes of nature. Trigunya Vishaya Veda. And then he says to Arjuna, what? Nish Trigunya Bhavarjuna. Oh, dear Arjuna, you should rise above these modes. Nirdwandvo Nityasattvasto. You should get out of this duality of the material world. Nityasattvasto, be established in the truth. Nirdwandvo Nityasattvasto. Nirdyogakshema Atmavan. You should be established in the self. So this is, anyway, very important verse in Bhagavad Gita. So what does Krishna actually mean when he talks about the Vedas mainly being the three modes of material nature? If you look historically, you know, when Krishna was speaking, the main exposition of the Vedas was the original four Vedas. You know, the Rig Veda, Atharva Veda, Yajur Veda, Sama Veda. Now, if you look at these Vedas, of course, the Rig Veda, that's the original like that. The Rig Veda is actually composed of hymns to the demigods. That's basically it, you know. Can you imagine that? So, of course, sometimes people say, Indologists, they say, because the Rig Veda is composed of hymns to the demigods, therefore, they come to this incorrect conclusion, therefore, Krishna, a worship of Krishna, is a later development. That's what the Indologists say. You understand? But if you think of it logically, also, but there are other things in the original Rig Veda too, that states, Om Tad Vishnu Paramam Pada Pashanti Yat Surya. It actually says all the demigods are looking to Krishna. But why are there so many hymns to the demigods and, you know, practically nothing for, you know, poor old Narayan? Not old, but anyway, poor Narayan doesn't get anything. Well, it can be explained very easily. Like if you do a numerical count, you know, it'll be like, proportionately, the demigods get everything and Narayan, you know, gets a little bit over there. So why is that? The reason, very logically, and it can be understood even by us, is that when people deal with the universal government, you know, they usually deal with the lower people in the governmental rung. Like if I have some dealings with the Australian government here, you know, let's say I want to get a driving license here. Because, you know, I want to speed in the road or something like that. I want to drive the Mercedes real fast or something. Let's say I want to get a driving license. I don't approach the Prime Minister. You know, that would be kind of stupid, you know. My dear Prime Minister, please give me a driving license. You approach someone who's really low in the governmental hierarchy, right? So most of my interactions will be with the low people, not with the high people. I mean, that wouldn't work. Interacting with the high people. Also, if you interact with the high people, it has to be on a different subject matter. You know, international diplomacy, you know, some really elevated subject matter. So the same thing with the governmental administration of God. That if you're interacting, you're wanting something in the material world like more rain, generally you don't pray to Krishna. Of course, Krishna does send, you know, say, Akama sarva kama moksha kama dharati to vaina bhakti yogini yajeta purusham param. That if you're free of material desires, full of material desires, or desires of liberation, come to me. He does say that. But generally people, you know, they want to do all this demigod stuff because you get a quick result there. You know, if you try to approach the Prime Minister, it may take a longer period of time. Krishna in the Gita says, well, those who worship the demigods get quick results. So why not worship the demigods? I mean, even the gopis, when they wanted a husband, of course they wanted a good husband, not some of these rascal husbands. But anyway, say they wanted Krishna as a husband, who do they worship? Kachayani. And even in our Vaishnava calendar, there's this whole area of Kachayani puja, right? That you, this whole time that you actually supposed to, you know, I tell all the unmarried girls whenever I'm in a temple, it's time to do it. Time to start your Kachayani puja, and the girls take out their deities, you know. My dear Kachayani, please give me a husband with a lot of money. Please give me, you know, whatever, young husband. Anyway, it's interesting. When the girls were worshipping Kachayani on the banks of the Ganges, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu would destroy their offerings. And he said, you should just worship me. And when they said, we're not going to worship you, he said, well, I curse you to have an old husband with three cold wives, you know, four wives together. I curse you. Like that. So there were girls who got really worried, you know, Lord Chaitanya's curse was going to work. Because nobody wants an old husband and several co-wives, right? Unless the old husband has money, then he's kind of nice. Because why? Because he'll die and he'll leave everything to you. That's nice, isn't it? Does that, you see that, like this, Jacqueline Kennedy, when Kennedy died, you know the story? She married this Aristotle Onassis, who was a shipping magnate. And said, you know, and the guy died. And she was in ecstasy. Anyway, so that's another subject matter. So they worship the demigods for material gain. That's the general procedure. Therefore, the majority of the original Vedas deal with Trigunya, the three modes of material nature, you know, Vishaya, all that other stuff, because that's what people want, basically. Now, that's interesting. We were talking a little bit about this history. People wanted that, so therefore, when people want something a lot, it's a good business, right? And if something's a good business, then you have to have businessmen to conduct the business. So in the Vedic system, the businessmen are called Brahmins. This type of business, you know. And they were really wealthy at that time. You know, the Brahmins, even though they're supposed to be, what, renounced and self-controlled and everything, because the Brahmins at that time were very much into the rituals. They were expert in the rituals, and you had to study for years to be expert. It's not like nowadays, you know, in the ISKCON movement, you give someone a sacred thread and he goes on the altar and all of a sudden he's a Brahmin. In those days, you had to be brought up in a Brahminical family, you know, born in a, you know, a Sharma family or a Trivedi family, or what other families are there? Shah family or something like that. And you certainly wouldn't want to be born in an Adobe family. You know what Adobe family is? There's actually a caste in Gujarat, I found out, called the Adobe caste. And I was just thinking, boy, that would be embarrassing to be born in a washing caste. Is that, you know, what's your gotra, Adobe? Like if you're in the university or you go into a temple, you know, they ask you what your gotra is. And you say, I'm Adobe. Wow. Or a Toby Waller or something like that. You know, head salesman or something. So it's sort of a monopoly. You understand what a monopoly is? Nowadays, if the businesses have a monopoly, the government breaks it up, doesn't it? Like the telephone. I don't know if it was here in Australia, but in America there was this AT&T. And they had a monopoly on all the phones. The government came in, broke them up into what they call baby bells. You ever hear that before? She knows, she invests in the stock market. She has all that stuff. So they broke them up into all these baby bells, and the baby bells formed other companies. And you have, I mean, just like in Fiji previously, there was one mobile phone company, it was called Vodafone, still there. And they were charging horrendously high prices for everything. And then this new company, Digicel, came. Heard of that? No. And Digicel came, and now the prices are going down dramatically because of the competition. So in the same way, the Brahmin is they had no monopoly. They had a monopoly, I'm sorry. They had a monopoly. They were able to charge whatever they wanted. Just like I have one disciple in Nandi. His name is Bhagawan. You ever heard of him? Yeah. You met him. He was on the tour. So, you know, he has probably the only disciple with, like, you know, hair, looking like a Brahmin. You know, he's like one of these traditional South Indian Brahmins. And I was just talking to him. I just saw him in Nandi when I was flying out, and I said, you know, how's business? You know, the economy we have. He said, it's great. He said, you know, just, I said, how much do you charge per yagya? He said, about $300 or $400, you know. But if they want some special yagya, it's an extra 100, more people, for each extra person, it's $100. I said, wow. I said, I'm in the wrong business. Let me grow my hair and, you know, just become a South Indian pandit, you know. I could build a temple in Govardhan very easily, just doing yagyas all day long. So anyway, so it's a business. And the Brahmanas, they became so proud, and they still are so proud, that, you know, if someone else stepped on their shadow, they would get angry and curse them. Did you ever see that? I mean, the Brahmanas, like, you know, They're just like the king. So that's actually not a Brahmana. You know, Brahmana is actually supposed to be voluntarily poverty-stricken and, you know, giving away charity, yajan, yajan, patan, patan, dana pratigraha. He gets money, he gives it away, he doesn't just hoard it and, you know, build a big house and things like that. So that's what was happening historically, that the Brahmanas were getting fatter. You ever heard this statement, Brahman belly or something like that? They would have big belly. Because also, big belly means big heart attack later on. So South India, isn't it? In South India, they have very high level of heart attacks. Because the Brahmins have big bellies. And it, proportionate to the size of the belly, this is a scientific fact, you have heart disease and diabetes. It's a direct proportion. Like that. So anyway, so the Brahmanas were just like having this monopoly. And then what happened is that not only did they have a monopoly, but a lot of their sacrifices entailed the killing of animals. You understand? Like the Gomeda, Ashwamedha. Of course, these are bona fide sacrifices, but in the previous ages, when they did these sacrifices, the cow or the horse would actually become revived and take a better birth, a human birth in the next life. It's not that they just like threw the horse into the sacrifice and feasted on its flesh. Horse meat. You let me think, ooh, horse meat, but actually cow meat is worse. They would, anyway, so they even do that with a cow. They were getting into all these different types of sacrifices, killing the animals without the proper mantras. It's Kali Yuga. Gomeda, Ashwamedha are prohibited in Kali Yuga. And so what happens was basically there was a rebellion against these brahmanas. And the rebellion wasn't a... like a violent rebellion like you see nowadays, but it was more of a philosophical rebellion. It's interesting in India that the rebellions or the differences or conflicts between different religions are not on the level of violence, physical violence, or at least they weren't until the Muslims came in. Before that, people just, you know, it was a civilized thing. You had a different philosophy? Okay, I challenge you to a debate. Not that I challenge you to a duel, or to a, you know, I issue a fatwa against you. You know, you have a different philosophy. You know, just like ISKCON sometimes has different philosophies with people from the Gaudiya Mouth and everything like that. You know, usually I haven't heard about killing like that. But in the Muslim religion, they are killing between different branches. Actually, I'm starting to sneeze with a flower. God bless me. So they're starting, no one else will, so. So they're starting, they kill, you know, the Shiite Muslims kill the Sunni Muslims. The Shiite Muslims kill the Sunni Muslims, and there's different branches of the Shiites and Sunni Muslims that attack each other. So it's, you know, it's a different way of dealing with things. India actually had a civilized way of dealing with philosophical differences. Anyway, so getting back to the point is that the Brahmanas, thank you, the Brahmanas had a monopoly, and the Kshatriyas, they were the ones who were upset. So the Kshatriyas fought the Brahmanas, not by killing them, but basically by coming up with new religions. Like both the Buddhist religion and what's called the Jain religion came up at that time. There were actually rebellions against the Brahminical, you know, hierarchy. Anyway, and then so they were outside the Vedic system. But even within the Vedic system, there was rebellion too against the Brahmanas. And those people rebelled, though they were called the Shramanas. Shramana means people go to the forest. The people will go to the forest. So they were actually, the whole renounced section of society started at that time because they were so upset the way that the Brahminical monopoly that they went to the forest and they thought, you know, life is for self-realization. It's not for this, doing all these Brahminical ceremonies, like they have the marriages, they last for 3 days, 4 days, 5 days. And you can imagine how much a Brahmin would get paid for a marriage in the old days. Nowadays, you do a marriage, hour and a half, it's over, finished. Right? You tell me marriage, right? Hour and a half. And the Brahmana, maybe you'll give him $100 or something like that. But in the old days, it was like, $10,000 or something. Like a doctor. It was a very specialized, like doctors have monopolies too. Like if I want to go to a doctor in the United States and have heart surgery, even something simple like an appendix taken out, it's like $20,000, $30,000. And doctors are raking in the money. Of course, they have to pay a lot in insurance too, because they get sued. It's a whole, in America, it's an oligarchy, the money rules. Like everyone's suing everybody else. It's called the deep pocket philosophy. You understand? Like if someone has deep pockets, it means a lot of money, you sue them. So everybody in America, they're putting all their money in, the rich people, they put their money in different, corporations and things like that, and they take them out of their personal lives so they can't. But anyway, there's all these legal strategies. So getting back to the Brahmanas had this rebellion, and that was internally within the Vedic system was the Shramanas. They went to the forest, and also they established monasteries, and they engaged in self-realization like that. The Brahmanas didn't engage in self-realization in general. We're talking about 5,000 years ago, when Kali Yuga began, the Brahminical culture actually became perverted. And then you had the Buddhists too, with the Buddhists and the Jains, who were very similar to the Vedic system, but their philosophy actually throughout the Vedas, the Buddha rejected the Vedas, and so did the Jains reject the Vedas. And they were very, both of these sects or religions were completely into nonviolence at that time. Like Prabhupada said, Buddha taught ahimsa paramo dharma, that ahimsa is the topmost dharma. And the Jains too, same thing. You see actually the same thing. They're both Kshatriya-based religions because the Buddhists, Siddhartha, he was a Kshatriya, he was a prince. And the Jains also the same thing. And so the Jains, of course, even today, some of them wear the masks, you see, to prevent harm to any, insects or other microbes or things like that. So, because they were very much upset with the Brahminical abuse of power and the Brahminical cruelty towards other creatures. So you see where Krishna is coming from when he talks about the Vedas mainly being interested in the three modes of material nature. That's a historical basis. Because this was, 5,000 years ago, beginning of Kali Yuga, after the Bhagavad Gita, after Krishna left the planet, Kali Yuga actually began. So Krishna is actually indicating this by his statement, the Vedas mainly meant to the three modes of material nature. So that's what this verse says. I don't know if we have any more time. And Arjuna is enjoined to transcend the three modes of material nature by taking up devotional service. So this is the question that's being raised by Maharaj Pariksit, that simply traveling within this material world under the three modes of material nature is not going to free the living entities from the suffering, because the three modes of material nature are continually dragging the living entities here and there. And even if one goes up to the heavenly planets, Shane Punya Marchi Lokam Vishanti, they have to come back down. And three modes of material nature, the mode of ignorance may affect one, and one may actually even go further down and suffer in hell. So Pariksit Maharaj is asking Shukadeva Goswami for a solution, an ultimate solution, not just a temporary solution. So that's what's happening here. So any questions or comments or problems or issues? No? Yeah. Yeah. Oh, about compassion. I think we'll leave that for tomorrow because I've already spoken up. We'll get to it. Tune in next time from when we talk about compassion. But that's a long discussion. And that's really what Pariksit Maharaj is asking about here. What can we do about this? These people going to the hellish situations. And Pariksit Maharaj, later on in this chapter, actually very soon, is tested by Shukadeva Goswami. And Shukadeva Goswami gives him answers that are not bona fide. You understand? You see, the guru in this particular case is actually giving an improper answer to the disciple just to test the disciple. It was a really interesting interaction later on in this chapter. We'll probably get to that while I'm here. Maybe. I hope. I think it's only about 5 or 6 verses from here. It happens after verse 6. That Shukadeva Goswami gives this answer that to free the living entities from the suffering of the material world, I'm paraphrasing it, one has to undergo prayaschitta. You know, prayaschitta means atonement. And then Parikshit Maharaj actually doesn't accept that answer. What was that noise? Someone's stomach or something? Someone's hungry. It's hungry. That means it's time for prasadam. Okay? Anyway, so Parikshit Maharaj is testing his... I mean, Shukadeva Goswami is testing his disciple, and then Parikshit Maharaj is objecting to the explanation. Okay? Any other questions? Quick questions. Yeah, quick, about the subject matter.
How important is it that we learn the Brahminical principles? I mean, not how to...
What Brahminical principles? I mean, you can't possibly learn how to do these original Vedic sacrifices.
Not the original Vedic sacrifices, but, like, I know that Mishrin Kovacha, he's, like, started the Mayapur Academy, and he's talking about how Srila Prabhupada wants us to be trained properly to be Brahmanas, and not that we just sort of stay in our Australian culture
Well, Brahmana means the qualities. I mean, all these different rituals actually can, and I'm not criticizing what he's teaching, but if you get too much into these rituals, you actually start to forget the purpose of the rituals. I mean, there's a certain point where, you know, the knowledge counterbalances, I mean, the knowledge of the rituals counterbalances your dedication to self-realization. You just become, you know, Vidavata Rata, you know, just become a ritualistic Brahmana. So one has to be careful about that.
Even in Bhagavad Gita, Arjuna asked that question, the quality of Brahmana.
Yeah. Yeah, the quality of Samadhamatapakchocham, you know, the standard verse that we always quote. That's what makes a Brahmana. And even, you know, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, actually there's many examples that, just real quickly, there's a story of Jabali, whatever his name is, this is actually in the Upanishads, who was actually born from a prostitute. You've heard the story before? This is a famous story in the Upanishads, that this one man was born from a prostitute, not man, it was a boy, born from a prostitute. He didn't know who his father was, so he approached the guru. He wanted to be a brahmana. And the guru said, you know, what's your gotra? You know, what's your family name? And he said, well, Jabali. And the guru said, what kind of family name is that? Ask your mother who your father was. So he goes back and asks his mother. He says, why do I have the name Jabali? Jabali or something like that. And she says, that's my name because we don't know who your father is. It's like Fiji, you know. And the birth certificates, they don't put the father's name on for Fijians. Did you know that? In many cases, because it would be too embarrassing because they can't figure out who the father is. And like nowadays, they have this genetic testing because you have to figure out who the father is, otherwise you wouldn't know. Isn't it? Big thing, genetic testing. Big, 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 big thing because it's, you know, there's a lot of controversy. Your mother has had like 200 relationships, you know, to figure out, you know, eeny, meeny, miny, mo, catch my father by the toe, you know, if he hollers, let him go. So that's, isn't it in Australia like that too?
Yes, yes.
Yeah, yeah. Not amongst the Indian community so much, but amongst the Aussies. So he went back to his guru, and Gurudev said, you know, all right, what's your gotra? Who's your father? He gave the same answer. He said, my mother said, I don't know, and I don't know who my father was because my mother had all these relationships. And his guru said, what? Does anyone remember the story? He said, you're a real Brahmin. You're a real Brahmin. Because you're telling the truth. So here was someone who really, you know, really low-class family, obviously, you know, brought up like that, probably didn't know too many mantras or anything like that, but he was considered a Brahmin because he told the truth. And that's one of the qualities listed by Krishna in the Gita. So that's really what we're looking for, not someone who's expert in all these things. Although, you know, for preaching, it may be useful to learn a lot of these things in India, for preaching in India. And for preaching in the West, you know, that's another thing. You know, people just get turned off if you come in with all these mantras and everything like that. You know, some new Aussie comes in from on his surfboard into the temple. Isn't that in Bondi Beach? And he comes in and you start going, dun, 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 dun. And to him, it's just like a boring movie. So you got to understand how to present Krishna consciousness. I mean, when I joined the movement, then all we had in the temple was just a picture of the Panchatattva. You know, no three-dimensional deities. And there was no problem. I didn't freak out and say, where are the deities? You know, where's the mantras? Where's the mulas? Or where any of these stuff? Because it was preaching. But in India, you got to learn these things. But actually, if you learned all the injunctions in the Hari Bhakti Vilas, you would probably be a little crazy or a lot crazy. I have one disciple in Mayapur, well, now he's in Calcutta, who's really into following all the injunctions in the Hari Bhakti Vilas, and it drives me completely crazy. I mean, actually, when there's a codicy, you know, every codicy is followed differently. Some codices you have to install a metal deity and send it to your guru, so I get these packages in the mail with all these metal deities, you know, sent from India. And others that you have to eat this type of sesame seeds, and it's just like, you know, just like, wow. You know, what's happening here? And then if you go into the Hari Bhakti Vilas, also about picking tulsi leaves, it gets so complicated. You're not supposed to pick on the Dwadasi. You're not supposed to pick on the Ekadasi. You're not supposed to pick between certain hours of every day. You're not supposed to pick on the full moon. You're not supposed to pick on the new moon. I mean, most devotees just know about the Dwadasi you're not supposed to pick. But it's actually a lot more than that. You know, it's the time of the day, the cycle of the, you know, the other stars, you know. If Mars happens to be in a certain house, you're not supposed to pick, or else it's sinful. And just like, let me join another movement, you know. You know, let me become a Muslim or something. Not really. I mean, anyway, you got to have a certain mentality to just be into all those things. It just drives me crazy when I start to think about it, isn't it? You mean, just like when you see Tulsi Devi, you want to give some manjaris to your deities, you just have to check your computer, you know, the astrological chart to see if it's bona fide to pick at this particular instant. You know, everybody's going to need a palm top computer just to perform devotional service. And then you get more sophisticated with this calendar stuff, isn't it? Like, oh yes, it's a codicy here in Sydney, but not in Brisbane. In Brisbane, it's Gorpanime. Here, it's Ramnomi. You know, anyway, it's not that much difference. Isn't it? The Prabhupada was very simple. He said, you know, if it's a Gorpanime or a codicy in Mayapur, it's a codicy everywhere. I mean, Lord Chaitanya did not appear in Sydney as much as you would like to think he did. Did he? I mean, in deity form, maybe. But I mean, Krishna, you know, when it's Janmasthami, Krishna appeared in Vrindavan. Actually, people think he appeared in Mathura. He didn't appear in Mathura. That's a big mistake. Krishna, anyway, there's a whole story about that. But when Vasudeva actually brought Krishna to Vrindavan, there was Brajendra Nandana Krishna right there, who was born from Mother Yashoda, and the Vasudeva Krishna merged into the Brajendra Nandana. You heard that story before. Anyway, so
was it Vrindavan or Govardhan?
Well, that's part of Vrindavan. When I'm talking about, when I say Vrindavan, when I use the word Vrindavan, I actually mean Braj. Yeah, the word Vrindavan can be used in two ways. It can be used just the city Vrindavan or Braj. So generally I'm using it in terms of Braj when I say Vrindavan. Yeah, I don't mean just the city. The city. Yeah. I mean, it depends on the context. The context. And also if you say Mathura Mandala, that also includes Vrindavan. You know, Brajmandala, Mathura Mandala. Mathura Mandala, you know, sometimes people say Mathura, and that means also the whole Braj area, too. So it depends on the context of what you're indicating. Anyway, so Krishna appeared there. So getting back to the point, I mean, Krishna, there's no statement that Vasudeva transported Krishna from Sydney to Brajmandala, isn't it? You know, he took a boat or a plane, you know, went on Singapore Airlines. You know, so he appeared there. So why don't, you know, when it's Janmashtami there, it's Janmashtami here too, right? Anyway, there's different logical statements. Of course, those who are really into the details will never agree with me. But Prabhupada was not like that. Prabhupada said sometime, you know, if you want to find out about all these rituals, he said, ask my god brothers. Because Prabhupada, you know, Prabhupada just did things very simple, you know. Even like the way we offer prasadam in ISKCON is really not the traditional method. You know, the four mantras we say, the pronouns of the spiritual master, Namo Mahavadanaya, Namo Brahmanya. If you look in the deity worship book, it doesn't say that. But Prabhupada taught us to do it that way. So which is right, which is wrong? I mean, if Prabhupada taught us something, Krishna's accepting. That's all I know. You know, Prabhupada taught us to stand on our heads and say Krishna eat as the deity worship mantra. That would have been the right way to do it. So, you know, because Prabhupada is connected with Krishna. See, the essence is not the mantras so far, is the connection the spiritual master has with Krishna. It's by his authorization that something is going on. And, you know, so if he says Krishna accept, Krishna will accept. Like that Raghunandana, the son of Mukunda, he would just like cried before Krishna, threatened Krishna, and Krishna had to eat. So a pure devotee is like that. I think we have to end now. Because it's work. So all glory is to His divine grace, Śrīla Prabhupāda, Śrīla Prabhupāda ki jai.